PodSafe America is brought to you by Simply Safe Home Security. Most smart cameras are like cable news pundits. They just sit there, watch the chaos happen, and then tell you about it later. Hey, looks like you're being robbed. Back to you, John. You don't need a pundit in your living room. You need Secret Service. That's good. Traditional security systems only act after someone has already broken in. That's too late. Simply Safe's Active Guard outdoor protection can help you prevent break-ins before they happen. Although I might want to tweak that line from Secret Service can help you to some other agency that hasn't had so many misfires lately. Anyway, while other security companies lock you in, Simply Safe comes with no long-term contract. They earn your trust every day by keeping you safe and satisfied. They are so confident in the protection they provide, they even back it with the anti-theft guarantee. Simply Safe protects over 4 million people. They have 20 years experience in home security. They were just named Best Home Security System of 2026 by U.S. News and World Report, and they've been named the best customer service in home security with industry-leading customer satisfaction scores to prove it. What do you love about your Simply Safe?
I set up a Simply Safe. It's incredibly easy to do. It's easy to customize to your home. The customer support is great. The app is really easy to use. It's really reliable. It gives you peace of mind.
Right now, our listeners can get 50% off their new Simply Safe system at simplysafe.com/crooked. That's simplysafe.com/crooked. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.
Welcome to PodSafe America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm John Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vitor.
On today's show, we're going to talk about all the latest developments in Trump's war, the energy crisis he's created, J.D. Vance's courageous opposition via anonymous leaks, the president accusing media outlets of treason and his FCC chair threatening to take away their broadcast licenses, Trump fundraising off of the death of American soldiers, and finally, what would you trade to get the president's personal cell phone number? We'll dig into the hottest new trend in D.C., cold calling Donald Trump. Also, please consider becoming a subscriber if you haven't already so that you don't miss out on any Crooked content. Friend of the Pod subscribers get our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends. Many people are saying it's the greatest new show on the air right now. Pod Save America Only Friends.
Yeah, it's just for the subscribers. It's where we have our real opinions. That's where we save them for there.
The most correct take.
Behind the paywall.
You also get other subscriber-only shows like Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer, access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs, ad-free episodes of all your favorite Crooked Pods, and you get to feel good about supporting an independent pro-democracy media company that Brendan Carr can't shut down. We are beyond his regulatory scope. So head to crooked.com/friends and subscribe today. All right, let's get to the news. As the Iran war enters its third week with no end in sight, Trump said a few words about the conflict at the top of his remarks during a White House event about the Kennedy Center renovations, where it was clear the president had one thing on his mind.
We are pounding that area, that coast, pounding it hard. They took a pounding from Rick. You know, he knows what it is to pound people. He was a little rough with a couple of the people, but that's okay. They've survived.
I didn't watch that beforehand on purpose. That was great work. Just a masterful supercut there. There was a lot of pounding.
Yeah.
A lot of pounding.
You know who else getting pounded? New supreme leader of Iran, apparently. According to the New York Post.
Allegedly.
I guess we'll get to that. Sorry.
We don't want to slander him. What do you get, a lawsuit?
No, that's right. Well, look, he could pound who he wants
Ayatollah.
To pound. I don't care.
I gotta say, we gotta be low down on that guy's priority list at this point.
Yeah.
That was the joke.
Yeah, we want to wake up. We want to wake up first, I think. A lot of talk of pounding. Do you think he remembers that Rick Grenell is gay when he's talking about this?
Mm. Yeah, when he was saying Rick there, he was talking about Rick Grenell, who was running the Kennedy Center and then just left.
Rick Grenell is a human, a Twitter troll that became a human, Worked in the intel world for a while, was ambassador to Germany, was the DNI for a while, acting DNI in the last administration, wanted to be Secretary of State, didn't get it, became the head of the Kennedy Center, and then got fired from that.
Because he was pounding artists.
Yes, he is an asshole.
As Trump said, pounding too many artists at the Kennedy Center.
Doesn't seem like he's a people person in that role. So
Trump did address the latest developments in Iran, which he claimed has been literally obliterated before browbeating other countries for not helping the U.S. reopen the Strait of Hormuz by sending warships, even though he said, quote, we don't need anybody because we already won, even though he just sent 2,500 Marines to join the 50,000 U.S. troops deployed in the region. Here's more on all that from our very focused commander-in-chief.
They have been literally obliterated. Numerous countries have told me they're on the way. Some are very enthusiastic about it, and some aren't. And when we want to know, do you have any minesweepers? Well, we'd rather not get involved, sir.
Who's that?
For 40 years we're protecting you, and you don't want to get involved in something that is very minor? We attacked Kharg Island and knocked it literally, and destroyed everything on the island except for the area where the oil is. I call it the pipes. We left the pipes. Just one simple word, and the pipes will be gone too. See, Trump Kennedy Center, it's been let go to hell. The bones are potentially something that could be unbelievable. There's never been a paint. I said, someday I'm going to discover a paint where you don't have to actually use gold leaf. Gold leaf is a very, very big and expensive process, but it's a beautiful thing, but not when you use paint. So,
week three of the war, we are doing Monday morning events about the Kennedy Center renovations, and said a lot more about the renovations than he did about the war itself.
His impression of our allies, like, doy, doy, doy.
So he later talked about like how we have 45,000 troops, and he said in Japan, defending Japan, South Korea, defending South Korea, and Germany. So which of those leaders of those three countries do you think he was doing the impression of?
He definitely didn't want to do. He stopped himself from doing any kind of an accent, which I think is positive.
Yeah, it is good.
I thought he was talking about Europe and NATO, but I could be wrong. I think they have some minesweepers, but it doesn't really matter.
I think Chancellor Merz came out today to say, like, NATO's not for this. It's a defensive alliance. Why would we send troops to help with you with your war of choice? So maybe he was talking about the Germans, but it could have been Japan. It could have been South Korea.
Yeah. So basically what's happened is, reportedly the Iranians have begun to lay mines in the Strait of Hormuz, although Trump today said, we don't know, they might have, we don't know, we can't tell, we haven't seen anything yet. They're all obviously still firing at ships, and so no ships are going through basically right now, and energy prices, I think oil closed at still around $100 a barrel today, and so that's the situation right now, and Trump wants to open the Strait of Hormuz, but apparently the U.S. military can't do it ourselves, and so he is begging all these countries to join, but then not begging them. No one has really said yes yet. I haven't seen. Have you seen any, Tommy?
No, not yet. I mean, and he's doing impressions of them that are not very nice. I think the Iranians are letting through oil that are in their tankers, or maybe even Chinese-owned tankers, so they're letting some oil through. Yeah, I'm sure most of these groups that he's making fun of, they're pissed that Trump started this war, didn't consult them, and now he's saying, hey, can you help us out? And he's also being a dick about it. I mean, again, like the yelling at NATO, like this is not what NATO is for. They're a defensive alliance. It's also incredibly dangerous. I mean, he says in that press conference that all you need is one Iranian missile or rocket or mine, and you have a catastrophe. And so why would anyone want to participate in that? I mean, we're not escorting ships through the Strait of Hormuz yet. Why would the Japanese or the, Germans want to help us out?
Trying to build a coalition of straight allies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah, that's what the S is for. Yeah, it's hard to figure out where the mines are. Famously, you have to hover both of the mice button over it, and you'll really only know if there's one, two, three around you. I just want to, this is beside the point, but it is the idea of Donald Trump, one of the people with the sort of worst taste you'd ever could imagine, suggesting that the Kennedy Center has great bones when it's one of the most beautiful buildings built in like probably the last 100 years, beautiful thing that he's planning to destroy. Again, not high on the list of reasons to be bothered by Donald Trump, but I do think it's worth mentioning, especially because it is inconceivable, even a couple years ago, maybe even in the first Trump term, that you would be, about a week or so into a war and have unrelated press events
related to interior design. You would not typically do that. It would be actually something that I think you'd be kind of a bipartisan uproar about, that a president could possibly think it was worth his or her time to be focused on architecture of local landmarks during a time in which we've just lost, what now, over 13 members of the armed forces. We bombed a school, killed over 175 people, but this is the world we live in.
Did you see that he's also considering getting rid of the Ionic columns?
Yes.
In front of the White House?
Yes. So he prefers style, Corinthian. Yeah. Corinthian. He prefers, yeah, Corinthian.
It's a little more flair, I think.
Well, they're gaudier, right? And yeah. I think the, yeah. He doesn't really appreciate the kind of story that the different kinds of columns tell, but I don't think he took Art History 101 at Williams College in 2003, so I guess that's probably why.
Well, look at us. Now we're distracted from the Iran war. Anyway,
Imagine being one of these countries that he wants to get involved in the war. Like, today he said they hit Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE, Kuwait. Nobody expected that. We were shocked. They fought back. Everyone expected that. What the Iranians are doing is what everyone expected them to do, which is to fire at U.S. military bases in these places, to close the Strait of Hormuz. And I don't think most experts I talk to figured that Iran would view this as existential and they would punch back as hard as they possibly could, which probably meant creating an economic cost. And now there's all this reporting that Trump was high on his own supply after Venezuela, and he either dismissed or ignored warnings about how much more complicated an Iran operation would be. And now we're in this mess. And Axios described his staff as having, quote, buyer's remorse, but he refuses to back down. So every step is escalatory. And you're telling, like, NATO or the Philippines or Japan to jump into this situation? Send your troops?
I got to say, too, from just a pure political perspective, can't reflect too well on Donald Trump with the American people that we put out a call for our allies to help us and no one wants to help us. maybe because he has browbeat all of them, not just in the run-up to this war, but on tariffs, on NATO, on everything else. Everything. He has basically spent an entire year and many years before that just attacking all of our closest allies, and now he's somehow surprised when they don't come to our aid and for his crazy fucking war plans.
He didn't tell us why he was doing this. He clearly didn't tell them either. Yeah, to Tommy's point, like, maybe the most predictable outcome, like, I think you can go back and find papers that say, well, in the event that the supreme leader is killed, Iran would view it as an existential threat and therefore might resort to closing the Strait of Hormuz and firing upon other neighboring countries. Like, it's sort of just, the exercise of what would happen, this is what people said would happen, but you're completely unprepared for it. And going around to talk to allies about how they could help after the fact rather than before. Like, do you guys know about, you know, Leroy Jenkins is? When I say Leroy Jenkins, does that mean anything to you?
Of course.
Like, that's what he's doing. Like, it's actually a pretty Leroy Jenkins going to war with Iran. And he ran in there and everybody's like, what's he doing? Like, no, we're
Leroy!
Not.
Leroy!
And so he's expecting everybody to come in behind him.
Google
and like, no,
YouTube
it.
I know he did. I know he gave no context for you, listener. Just YouTube it for whenever you have a second.
Yeah.
He mentioned Karg Island.
Mm-hmm.
Karg Island is where something like 90% of Iranian oil exports go out of, right? Mm-hmm. And so he talked about bombing the island, all the military installations, not the oil refineries there. So hasn't yet secured any of Iran's nuclear material. He's talked about potentially seizing Karg Island, deploying another 2,500 Marines to the region. It seems like either to take Karg Island or to seize the nuclear material, you would need ground forces, ground troops. Are we getting close to a war, do you think, Tommy, that involves ground troops?
If we take Karg Island, they have to have a general who's from Boston and has a really thick accent.
We got Karg.
We got Karg Island. That's beside the point that you were asking about. I find it very hard to believe that the U.S. and Israel, especially the Israelis, would not do something to get the uranium stockpile out of Iran. And I imagine that Trump would prefer the Israelis take the lead on that operation, but I think it would be a major operation that would probably involve both of us, because we're probably talking about two different nuclear sites. I've seen experts estimate that you'd need about 1,000 personnel to secure and conduct the operation at each. You'd need like a commando team that's trained in digging up and handling nuclear materials themselves to do the actual removal. You would need maybe like an excavator or other earth moving materials or machines to get at the stuff because it's under rubble because we bombed it. And then you'd need like a bunch of troops to secure a perimeter. You'd need to provide defense against missiles and drones. You would need either to seize a runway or to
create a runway to get the shit in and out. And then you would probably have people like in theater for a considerable amount of time. This wouldn't be Venezuela, like swoop in, swoop out. It would probably be boots on the ground for a while. So that is very, very dangerous. I think Karg Island is probably a little simpler in the short term, just like to seize the thing. But then you're just sitting there 15 miles away from the Iranian shore and can get fired at.
Also, how long are you occupying Karg Island right. at that point?
What's the goal? Is the goal just to cut off all oil and gas revenue in the short term? Is it to just own their oil and gas in the long term? I don't really know. So I imagine like I think there's like 99% chance that Netanyahu does something to get the HEU out. Now, letting the Israelis do it alone.
HEU
like,
is the highly enriched uranium.
Sorry. But what happens if, you know, an Israeli commando is captured or taken down? Like, there's ways this gets more complicated. So
I do think this shouldn't be a problem if whether Israel or the U.S. leads, because according to Trump, we've killed all the Iranian leaders anyway. So what do you think's going on there, too? They keep saying, the administration and Trump, like, insinuating that maybe the new Ayatollah is injured, that he might be dead. Trump's like, I don't even know who we would negotiate with. There's no leaders there anymore. Like, it doesn't seem like that's exactly on the level, but.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, they're trying to kind of run him down and suggest weakness, but I don't know to what end. And they clearly leaked this suggestion that the new Supreme Leader is gay to the New York Post, because they were then tweeting about it and like kind of taking a victory lap on the story. But like, again, what's the point of this? So we want a diplomacy and have an off-ramp?
It's really hard to know who's telling the truth, because like, you obviously know, you expect the Iranians to lie because it's like a regime that might lie, but also everything the Trump administration says there was also this Axios story that like there'd been there's a diplomatic channel now between Witkoff yeah. and the Iranians that has opened, and then the Iranians were like, no, that's a complete lie, what are you talking about? And the administration's like, no, they're lying, they're complete liars. And you're like, I don't know,
who knows.
It's funny to think that Kamala Harris and the Trump administration agree that neither country is ready for a gay leader. Do you think that's not what she was saying, even though it is what the words meant, but it's not what she was saying.
Apparently Iran may be ready.
Right. Do they, yeah. Do they, that Iran, Ayatollah Buttigieg. So I'm realizing that I'm gonna have to, moving the honeymoon from Strait of Hormuz to Karg Island was probably a mistake. Anyway.
Yeah, who knows? They're all liars. It's a real problem.
I also saw the administration officials told Axios that U.S. involvement could continue until September.
Yeah.
That is insane.
They don't know. Look, Trump talks about this war like he can turn it off and on. The Iranians have a say. The Israelis have a say.
There are 50,000 troops in the region, American troops in the region right now, all of whom are in some way exposed, some of whom have been killed. Like, it's just, it's not up to him.
They also, you know, they're like, well, maybe in a week or two, we can get the Navy, you can start escorting ships through the Strait of Hormuz. Like, that doesn't seem like an easy mission either.
No, that feels very expensive and time consuming and maybe feasible, but they're also... The stories about the U.S. Navy escorting ships through the strait say they'll start after the end of hostilities. So
right, yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah, when is how are the hostilities ending?
Pod Save America is brought to you by Hims. Hims can't help you fold a fitted sheet, but it can help you with your performance in bed. Mm-hmm. Take control of ED with personalized treatments made with doctor-trusted ingredients prescribed by licensed providers 100% online. Hims offers access to ED treatment options ranging from personalized products to trusted generics that cost 95% less than brand names. If prescribed, you shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. The goal? Erections. This isn't a one-size-fits-all care. It couldn't be. Then forgets you're in the waiting room. It's your health and goals put first with real medical providers, making sure you get what you need to get results. Think of Hims as your digital front porch that gets you back to your old self. Put some oink in that hog with 100% online access to trusted treatments for ED and more all in one place. To get simple online access to personalized, affordable care for ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/crooked. That's hims.com/crooked
for your free online visit, hims.com/crooked. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information. Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Pod Save America is brought to you by Cook Unity. If you've got culinary taste, you know how expensive exploring your local food scene can get, or how hard it is to find the time and energy to try somewhere new. Cook Unity is the first chef-to-you service delivering locally sourced meals from award-winning chefs right to your door every week, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. Go to cookunity.com/crooked or enter code crooked before checkout for 50% off your first week. I love Cook Unity. I ate Cook Unity today. I had a penne with vodka sauce with chicken parm and had some squash in there. I think they have a great breakfast burrito. There's so many good things from Cook Unity. I get 6 meals a week, and that's just 6 times either for lunch or sometimes for dinner, where I just know that I have, like, this is what I'm having. I always get the kind, you can get all different kinds. You can get no carbs or whatever, but I always get one that has, like, make sure I have a protein and a vegetable, and I just feel good about it. Your food arrives fresh, never frozen, in packaging that keeps meals fresh in the fridge for up to 7 days. Cook Unity's packaging is compostable, recyclable, or reusable. There are hundreds of dishes to choose from. It's really a huge amount of choices. And the menu is updated constantly. Options for vegan, paleo, pescatarian, gluten-free, and more. Filter for soy, nut, and dairy-free options. Menus are posted 2 weeks in advance, so you have plenty of time to choose. Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to your door. Go to cookunity.com/crooked or enter code crooked before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code crooked or going to cookunity.com/crooked.
So, the war isn't getting any more popular here in America, and one way you can tell without even looking at a poll is by this well-timed and very courageous leak to Politico, sourced to 2 senior Trump officials, one of whom texted that in the lead-up to striking Iran, Vice President J.D. Vance made his opposition known, is, quote, skeptical, quote, worried about success, and, quote, just opposes the war. Vance was asked about this while standing next to Trump in the Oval on Monday. Here's what he said.
Are you completely on board with the current war in Iran?
I know what you're trying to do, Phil. You're trying to drive a wedge between members of the administration, between me and the president. What the president said consistently, going back to 2015, and I agreed with him, is that Iran should not have a nuclear weapon.
So there's no hesitation, given your past statements, with the current operation?
Well, I think one big difference, Phil, is that we have a smart president, whereas in the past we've had dumb presidents, and I trust President Trump to get the job done.
So, that should do it, huh?
Too cute by half, I would say, from J.D. Vance.
Agreed. Yeah,
too cute by half. And there's been, you know, a series of stories about people gunning for Rubio, the real kind of behind-the-scenes jockeying, people who want to draft Rubio. And I don't know how plausible that really is, but what I take all of it to mean is just discomfort with Vance and the way Vance is just such a kind of, like, sleazy operator. Trump is a sleazy operator, but not in a way that you like him at the end of it, the way the others do. And so they look to Rubio as an alternative just because, like, Vance is just so full of shit.
First of all, Phil knows what he did there.
Phil knows what
he did.
You know,
Phil was being pretty divisive. Like, every time Vance gets this question, he has to whine and cry about the question itself and the questioner. He's like, I know what you're trying to do here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, first of all, that was not convincing. Like, I don't, you could watch Trump's face. I don't think it convinced Trump in that moment that Vance wasn't trying to put some distance between himself and the policy. The idea that Vance thinks he can run away from a policy this consequential when he's the vice president is insane to me. Maybe he thinks he can position himself in 2028 as being less hawkish than Marco Rubio, but, like,
I don't know how he does that. You're not getting any love from the
isolationist wing of the party.
But yeah, I don't.
Rubio has just as much stink on him, if not more, than J.D. Vance for this war, for any foreign policy adventure. Rubio is the national security advisor and the secretary of state. He's been one of the public faces, one of the few public faces.
That's what I'm saying. I think maybe J.D. could argue that Rubio is more hawkish than he is.
Oh, I thought you were saying, you were saying that maybe they turned to Rubio.
I think only not because of any kind of policy difference, but because just they don't like J.D. Vance. Like, he's just not a likable guy. He's just, like, so full of shit. They want to, like, Rubio is smart enough, to your point, to know that there's no way to run away from being tied to this. He's embracing it fully because it's his job to embrace it. I think he's more prone to being it. Like, he has a sort of neocon instincts more than Vance does. But he knows he's got to own this, so he's owning it 100%. The idea that, you know, J.D. Vance is going to be reluctantly the face of the war in Iran, like, it doesn't make him, like, to use an old joke, it doesn't make him a better person. It just makes him a worse prostitute, you know?
So the broader, like, the broader setup here is there's all these stories that Trump is polling everyone about who they like better. Is it Marco or is it JD? And it's like, he did it to a bunch of donors down in Mar-a-Lago. And I think all the donors in Mar-a-Lago preferred Rubio. And maybe that's because they're in Florida. Maybe it's because they're rich guys. Maybe it's because JD Vance a prick. Maybe it's because Rubio's been around longer. But yeah, I think they're both covered in the stink of this war. And this opens up a real, like, isolationist wing in the Republican primary next time that could be filled by someone like a Tucker Carlson or like, I don't know, Rand Paul suggesting he might run.
The Tucker thing seems to me the most plausible result of this, right? Because so let's say the war ends next week or a couple weeks, right? And, you know, it is obviously destabilizing for quite a long time, but like there isn't any giant catastrophe with, you know, more a ton of U.S. casualties and we're not there for like a year or whatever else. Then J.D. Vance thinks, okay, well, when it comes time for the primary, it's not really going to get brought up that much anyway. And maybe if I get asked about it, I can say, well, I think everyone knows for sure back then I got some shit for it that I wasn't exactly for the war, and then that's fine. But in any scenario where this is still a problem, or where there are like real consequences for this war, I think that like there is no way that J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio are ever going to be able to run away from this. And and all the energy, even if some donors like Rubio and some of the party establishment decides to like Rubio, which you could see, whatever's left of the establishment, or Vance, all the energy in a Republican primary is going to be for the Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly,
yes,
anti-war, calling themselves America First, Marjorie Taylor Greene, whatever it is, that side of the party, that's going to have the energy in a primary. And like J.D. Vance is going to get killed. And so is Rubio.
Look, let's hope this is not something that is sort of dominating the news, whatever, a year from now. I still think this has such a big, like, I don't know how J.D. Vance is going to go around saying he's not for wars in the Middle East after this, because they ran that. That was exactly what they said. And now we're in the middle of it. And I think it's a genuine conviction on the part of a lot of the, not just like the Megyn Kellys of the world, but the podcast, like the kind of big influencers, like a lot of voices on the right. I mean, they're just not going to forget this. They're just, it's not going to be able to walk back. And by the way,
political opportunity is just so great.
And J.D. Vance is not going to be able to walk it. Like, Donald Trump is going to be around. You think J.D. Vance is going to be able to successfully run away from Donald Trump? I find that hard to believe.
I do wonder there, like, the way that Trump was like, seemed completely fine there, didn't seem perturbed. Like, I wonder if Trump was like, well, I made the decision. If you need it for politics to just, I wonder if Trump is okay with that, is what I was wondering. Like, there's a possibility maybe.
It's hard to tell. I can't tell either. I was trying to watch his face, and it was not clear to me whether he was annoyed or not. I mean, as this thing continues and gets worse, I'm sure he'll get increasingly angry at everyone around him. But if I ran against him, I would say, JD, you can tell us now that you were opposed to this war, but when the chips were down, you were feckless and then you were silent.
Yeah, yes. Did you agree with it, or were you just weak and ineffective inside of the administration? And by the way, like, Rand Paul is one thing. If it is someone like Tucker Carlson is going to rip him to pieces, because he's not going to be able on a debate stage to get away with the kind of hemming and hawing that he's doing in this room.
Definitely.
It's going to be over and over again. Were you for it or not?
Yeah.
Were you against it or not?
Now, the smart politics for Trump would be to let J.D. Vance like have that other position, you know? I mean, honestly, even what Trump did there was better to J.D. Vance than what fucking Joe Biden did to Kamala Harris on Gaza. Right?
And on
according to all the reporting?
Privately, yes.
Privately. I mean,
privately telling her no daylight certainly wasn't great.
That's what I'm saying. Like, she could have staked out a position where she voiced her honest criticisms about Gaza.
Yeah,
and now we've seen from all the reporting that he didn't want her to do even that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, just to be clear, was both, that Kamala had agency there too. So it's not
right.
Like, Joe Biden didn't make Kamala Harris.
No, that is true. It was interesting to me that Trump has like let this go and not had a big problem with it.
I have the same thought, which is that it is. Are we going to be in a situation where Donald Trump gives more space to his VP to operate than Joe Biden did? I think it's possible.
So the political blowback over the war is clearly getting to Trump. On Sunday night, he falsely accused U.S. media outlets of working with Iran to amplify fake news about Iran, and said that those outlets, quote, should be brought up on charges of treason. This was after FCC Chair Brendan Carr, who was with Trump at Mar-a-Lago over the weekend, threatened to cancel television broadcasters' licenses over their war coverage. Trump then spent his flight home to D.C. attacking reporters for asking even the most basic questions about Iran. Let's listen.
Information that they know is false, that it's a very dangerous thing for the country. I think they could be in serious jeopardy.
So your fact about fundraising emails, do you think Rich White House knows a few of the vice transfer? Do you think it's an appropriate email to send your critics are saying that your fundraising?
I didn't say it all. I think it's maybe the most corrupt news organizations.
So, I mean, it's barely in the news today, but, you know, it does seem like the president threatening to shut down media outlets and charge them with treason. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it seems bad.
Yeah, he does that, so it doesn't lead to, but Trump does that. He calls people he doesn't like treasonous and says he's going to bring them up on charges. I think the car stuff is more important because the threat itself is enough to try to intimidate people into kind of hesitating, right? Like even if he never acts on it, right? People knowing that the FCC chair is like watching this closely, like maybe just like worry about a headline a little bit more that seems to be antagonistic to the administration. I think it's really dangerous. Even Brendan Carr said that that the government shouldn't censor speech it doesn't like, that the FCC does not have a roving mandate to police the speech, to police speech in the name of the public interest. And like the idea that he has now made himself the kind of assignment editor and national ombudsman of the media while kind of posting AI meme slop from the White House, that to me is really dangerous and more dangerous than Trump being in a bad mood because his war is going poorly and he doesn't like the coverage, because Brendan Carr is thinking about this all day, every day.
Yeah, I also just think it's worth remembering how bad the media coverage was in the run-up to the Iraq War, and how like anti-war voices were censored. Because thinking back to then, like the structural setup was, for example, NBC is owned by GE, which is like one of the biggest contractors of the Pentagon. Then you have reporters embedded with the U.S. military and their networks booking like current and former military guests. So you're constantly getting the pro-military perspective from that little silo. Fox News is branding anyone who opposes the war as anti-American, but even MSNBC was canceling their number one show with Phil Donahue because they were worried he was too anti-war. Then you have Judy Miller at the New York Times laundering intelligence for the Bush administration, and it's like a bad setup. Right? It's very easy to be pro-war. It's very hard to be against these wars, and the natural instinct is to be patriotic, and there's limitations and coverage that come from logistics and the nature of the Pentagon and how these things work. So you don't need to have Brendan Carr running around for the media to be tilted in a pro-war way already, but adding that on top of it, I think, is a really big deal and a pretty dangerous development and a sign that he's really flailing and he knows things are going badly. Well, I was gonna say, it's also worth pointing out how absurd the complaints are with the coverage here, which is like, first of all, what Trump was talking about is that there was like an image of, you know, Iranians celebrating the new supreme leader in the streets, and it turned out that it was AI and it wasn't that many people. Now, like, that was I don't even remember, like, there's not a lot of U.S. media outlets that were making that a huge thing.
He famously cares about accurate crowd counts.
I was going to say, like, that was,
we all remember.
So that's his complaint. The real complaints are that the media is what? Reporting, as Pete Hegseth said the other week, that it's front page news that Americans died in a war.
Right.
That's the complaint now.
Yeah, like they had something.
We're talking about American deaths in a war, and we're asking things like, "Hey, how long's the war going to ask? And are you going to send men and women into Iran on the ground and risk their lives?" Just like basic questions like that.
And he was angry about a headline about Wall Street Journal story about a number of planes that were damaged by an Iranian bomb and how damaged they were. Like, yeah. He's like sort of dancing on the head of a pin. Hegseth, on the end of last week, said in sort of his petulant, childish way, was like, I can't wait for David Ellison to take over CNN. Like, they're all just petulant. Like, with Donald Trump, like, in that moment, what he really is saying is, you're also fucking negative. You're asking me about all, you're just being negative. You're supposed to have negative, you're not talking about all the good stuff we're doing. You're bringing up all the stuff that that is both terrible, but also wounds my ego, the fact that Americans have died. That's an insult to me because it makes me look bad because I'm the one who caused those Americans to die, which he did, right? By launching this war, he invited what were going to be a response, and now Americans are dead because of it. He doesn't like to be confronted with that. That's what this is really about.
Yeah. I think it's also worth pointing out that, like, Brendan Carr's threat is completely empty. I mean, he can try, but, like, from a legal standpoint, first of all, he only has oversight over broadcast licenses for local television networks. And, you know, Brian Stelter and some others looked into this. Like, you start to try to threaten to take away a local broadcaster's broadcasting license because of what? Just made up inaccurate coverage, which he can't cite. It's just not going to happen. Now, he can still threaten them. And as we saw with the Kimmel thing, like, you threaten the local broadcasters and then maybe you get the parent companies like the ABCs and NBCs to worry a little bit. But, like, it's the whole thing is just like crazy fucking bluster, but it's meant to intimidate, you know? And it's like, and I think that's the Trump treason thing is too, because, like, yeah, Trump's not going to bring them up on charges of treason, but, like, you know, the DOJ has been charging people left and right, or trying to charge people left and right. And he also has sued a bunch of people personally.
Yeah. I think it's more than bluster. Like, Trump is threatening people. He's threatening people with DOJ prosecution, but then they kind of, you know, we just saw that the prosecution against the Fed chair got, you know, thrown out by a judge. Like, they're running into the brute incompetence of his DOJ. Like, Brendan Carr can tie things up. He can get all the affiliates to be worried, get the affiliates starting to be worried that the parent company is going to cause a problem. Like, this can be, like, we saw that with Kimmel, but, like, he has a lot of, just the threat, I think, is really dangerous. And yes, obviously, like, you don't need to be, like, a constitutional scholar to know that the FCC can't decide what the news is on behalf of these organizations, but that doesn't mean he can't do a lot of damage and get the network lawyers to become a little bit less permissive. And then all of a sudden they have had an impact on what we're seeing without us ever even knowing it.
Only argument is that it's not that it's just bluster. It's that Brendan Carr's threats and Donald Trump's threats are the same level of dangerous because, like, I think that legally Brendan Carr doesn't have as much power as he thinks he is, but the threat from Carr and the threat from Trump, the goal is intimidation, and it probably can work. So Trump isn't just targeting mainstream outlets over their Iran coverage. He's pissed at Trump-friendly pundits too. One of his deranged Sunday night posts was a lengthy defense of right-wing warmonger Mark Levin against the right-wing pundits who criticized him over Iran, like Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens. Trump called Levin's critics, quote, jealous and angry human beings who, quote, are not MAGA and, quote, will quickly fall by the wayside. The feud heated up over the weekend when Kelly hit back at Levin, calling her evil and diabolical. And so Kelly tweeted back at Levin, quote, I'm sorry you have a micropenis, but don't drag the rest of us into your drama. Very importantly, Marjorie Taylor Greene jumped in to say that, quote, MAGA has been destroyed by micropenis Mark Levin. Is she right?
So, where did micropenis come in? Like, when, Mark, it's just
loaded
from
question, yeah.
Right. Well, we know where it ends. We just don't know where it begins.
I feel like the whole feud's been inching towards that for a while now.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, obviously, we're not going to dive too deep into it, but yeah. Megyn Kelly just says Mark Levin has a micropenis.
Not a grower or a shower.
Yeah, this is just the tip of a much smaller iceberg.
Right. Right. No, I know. And it's just creating a lot of surprising amount of motion in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Very little friction, though.
She tried to explain it in a lengthy video.
Yeah, you watched that whole video.
I did too. I did as well.
I started and I got out.
Oh, it's great. Did you want to?
Well, the short version, the TLDR is Megyn Kelly was mean to Mark Levin.
Well, there is no long version.
So Levin called Daddy Trump to send a tweet defending him against the mean woman who is not nice to him, was Megyn Kelly. I think this fight dates back to the last build-up to the Iran war, if we want to get into that. I mean, like, Levin is very hawkish. He's in favor of bombing Iran. He's very in favor of Israel and Netanyahu in particular. Mark Levin, do you guys know that Mark Levin went and sat in the audience at Netanyahu's trial in Israel? Like, that's how like much of a buddy he is. And then Tucker Carlson at the time, this is last June or the run-up to the June war, was very against the war, also not a big fan of Israel, also not a fan of Netanyahu. He converged into anti-Semitism. And then, so the two started going to war over this policy, and then Charlie Kirk gets dragged in, Megyn Kelly gets dragged in. You sprinkle in like a tablespoon of Candace Owens. You got a dash of Ben Shapiro, you know, like a little bit of Nick Fuentes. And now this is just a full-on MAGA media war. There's some polling that shows that MAGA is for whatever Trump is for. And I think that is generally true. But Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson, they are attuned to their audiences. And they know what is getting downloads and attention, and they watch the data. So I don't think they go down this path that they didn't feel like there was an audience for it. And there's also polling that shows that U.S. views towards Israel have changed dramatically since 2023.
Dramatically.
Including among Republicans, 9-point shift in favorability among Republicans. So I think there's things happening under the surface. So Trump might be MAGA, and that might be the case for now, but I think this is a fight for the future of MAGA. And there are major shifts happening under the surface. Some of it is foreign policy, like we talked about with J.D. Vance. Some of it is support for Israel. But we get to enjoy the fruits of it in the form of a micro penis.
Yeah, under the surface and, you know, under Mark Levin's pants.
Yeah, it's actually like really been popping off. But
to your question, Levitt, though, basically she says, so he like tweeted about her 100 times and said all these vile shit about her. And she said, like, you know, I sent a few brushback tweets, as she is wont to do. And then she said, you know, and I just decided to just reveal that he has a micropenis. Not that I've seen it myself, but clearly we've all been exposed to it because someone who acts that hawkish and tries to overcompensate clearly has a micropenis. Like, that's just something that you know.
Yeah. She said, thankfully, I've never had to look at it firsthand, but you can just tell. And then she goes, when they go low, we go micropenis. And then she said, so obviously Trump's Truth Social post was drafted by Levin, and Levin's post thanking the president is equally long. It was the only thing that is.
Wow, that's good.
It was just a runner.
When they go low,
Kelly.
We go small. That's good.
That would have been,
And I know, and like Ben Shapiro has been basically challenging Megyn Kelly and others to like denounce Candace Owens, which I don't think she has done.
Yeah.
Or at least not to his satisfaction. And so like there is like this, it's a real like.
Yeah.
And it is always like nothing is more upsetting to a right wing figure than to be treated like a Democrat. It's like the most horrible. Like they can't understand what's like. What? Why are you talking this way about me? I'm not one of those people. You're not supposed to talk this way. And like they can't. It's a shocking experience.
It's amazing.
Speaking of Tucker, did you guys see that he said he thinks that the administration might charge him with under a FARA violation, acting as an agent of a foreign power for talking to people in Iran before the war, which he claims they knew he was doing because the CIA read his texts?
Yeah. So I didn't watch the whole episode Tucker did on this. He did like a 5-minute clip that I did watch. It is certainly possible, if not quite likely, that if Tucker was emailing with some Iranian officials, that gets picked up by the NSA or somebody, and maybe that can get reviewed. I find it very unlikely that the government would then tell him that, or that he would have committed a crime in the process. Like, I don't get how that's a FARA violation or any kind of violation.
And there's been some other anonymous sources batting it down, saying, no one's going to charge Tucker, which is obviously, you know, I don't want to see Tucker Carlson charged with a crime for simply talking to people and doing journalism. I don't want that to happen.
Candace Owens said that if it happens, we ride at dawn.
But where?
I guess, are we joining that as well?
Yeah.
First Amendment protector.
Crazy town. Yeah, I think the Ben Shapiro feud with Megyn Kelly is that Ben wants Megyn to denounce Candace for saying that Erica Kirk got Charlie Kirk killed.
Right.
And she won't.
Yeah, the Candace stuff on that is
getting real bleak over there.
She's a disturbed individual.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Spring is in the air, and while you're checking off organizational tasks on your spring cleaning to-do list, it's important not to forget about yourself. Therapy offers a space to slow down and stretch out when your mind feels overwhelmed with clutter.
BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served 6 million people globally. And it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Your emotional well-being matters. Find support and feel lighter in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/PSA. That's betterhelp.com/PSA.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube.
Believe it or not, since it involves Trump, there's also a corruption angle to the Iran story. Last week, and we heard some of this in the clip, a PAC affiliated with Trump called Never Surrender Inc. sent out a fundraising email featuring a photo of the president in front of a flag-draped coffin at the dignified transfer of six soldiers who were killed during the war's first week. The email presented readers with the opportunity to sign up for a, quote, national security briefing membership, which, for the price of a donation, would send them the president's personal, private, quote, national security briefings and unfiltered updates on the threats facing America. That news came after the New York Times reported that Jared Kushner, the president's second-choice son-in-law and one of the United States' lead negotiators in the Middle East, has been asking governments in the region to fund his private investment firm. Isn't that nice? Kushner's firm reportedly recently met with Saudi's sovereign wealth fund, which already contributed $2 billion to the fund at the beginning of the Trump administration and is planning to seek funding from the sovereign wealth funds of the UAE and Qatar. Where do you guys all want to start? Fundraising for your PAC off of the death of American soldiers, or fundraising for your investment fund off of your alleged role as the diplomat tasked with ending two wars? What's worse? What do you think?
Really one of the most disgusting images I think I've ever seen.
Shocking.
Actually shocking. He's there in that white hat. There's a literal coffin in the image. They're using the coffin of a dead service member to raise money. Unconscionable in any other era would be a massive ongoing scandal. If the president were asked about it, he would immediately say it was a terrible mistake, that the person who was responsible would be fired. It would still be a big scandal. There would be apologies. There'd be across the board condemnation from Democrats and Republicans. But this is just a blip because it's Donald Trump.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. I mean, it was genuinely shocking how tasteless it was, but also how politically stupid it was. I mean, I can't fire that person. It's criminally stupid. And by the way, as this is happening, there are GoFundMes going around for the families of these dead service members that I don't think Donald Trump is supporting. So it's shocking.
Anyone want to tee off on Jared?
I'm gonna take the over on it. All right, because Jared Kushner and Witkoff and maybe the other bozo real sons potentially making money on this is the only way I can see to war in Iran ending with the most recent living Ayatollah in the Oval Office with Trump talking about how beautiful the Strait of Hormuz is and like what a beautiful property it's going to be. And actually, I didn't know till Jared showed me how beautiful it is. It's a beautiful place. All I think about is, you know, remember we were talking about the mines? Always all about the mines. The mines is going to be beautiful. It's going to be a fantastic place. And we're so grateful to the new Ayatollah for recognizing Israel. It's going to be a beautiful property.
New head of the Palestinian Authority will be there too to talk about all the new high rises in Gaza.
Well, that's Witkoff, so that makes sense. So the younger. Yeah, that to me, I'm going to take the over on that one. I think the corruption is good.
Yeah, so Jared left the administration, started this investment fund, and he raised a bunch of money from the Saudis, billions from the Saudis, a bunch of money from the Qataris and the Emiratis. And that to me felt like kickbacks for services already rendered. And there was all these reporting at the time that, you know, the professionals at these sovereign wealth funds did not want to invest with Jared, but they were overruled by like MBS and other political actors. Jared then went into the wilderness for a while. Now he's back. He's doing negotiations with the Russians, with Ukraine, with he's doing stuff in Gaza. Now he's part of the Iran talks. And he said that he would not be making any money off the Board of Peace. He would not be raising money from the Gulf countries that he's working with. Of course, that was a lie.
To avoid conflicts, he said that too.
Yeah,
use the words.
And now he's trying to get more money for future favors. Also, at the same time, I mean, there's all this reporting that the Russians are providing intelligence to the Iranians to help them kill U.S. service members. I saw that the guy who runs the Russian Sovereign Wealth Fund was back down in Miami for meetings with Jared and Witkoff, presumably at one of their homes.
Also, we're removing sanctions on the oil, which is going to give them more money. So we're ostensibly funding now both sides of this conflict, not only and also strengthening Russia and Ukraine at the same time.
Yep. And the Emiratis bought 50% or 49% of the crypto company that the Trump family started. So the corruption and the rot is just so deep that I almost wasn't surprised by Jared raising this money. But it's so frustrating because this man, he doesn't have a government job. He has no official role. There's no oversight. There's no nothing.
But he's like out there briefing reporters as a senior administration official.
Yep. Yep.
Even though he's supposed to not be having an actual role in the government, except his role is apparently to cosplay making peace and then raising a bunch of money for his fund. Good for Jared.
Yeah. Over the weekend, I just was hearing from different people, and I have friends with family in Iran, and they were talking about how they just are waiting for regular updates when the member of their family can get Wi-Fi, just to say that he's safe, right? Like that's what they're living in between. Like, thankfully, some members of the family got out before, but now they just they're always really nervous. They hope everything's okay, and they just wait for when the internet's working to get a regular update. And then at the same time, I was hearing from family friends about an elderly relative in Israel who is infirmed, and so it is difficult for her to get in and out of shelters when there are bomb sirens that are going off, and that's happening all the time. And it's just really difficult. It's hard on the health, the real world consequences of this are just nowhere for these people. Like, there's the actual day-to-day, the sheer scale of what they've unleashed, right? The amount of people impacted by this, the number of people who are getting killed and whose lives have been upended, like the chaos they've unleashed. It just feels so abstract to them, even now, 2 weeks into it, for Kushner, obviously, for Witkoff, but for Trump, which is why when he's asked about the dead service members or anything like that, he's like almost angry to be confronted by the actual reality of what he's done, because he wants to only live in the fun story version that he's telling himself. But as, you know, Orwell had said, as famously quoted by Christy fucking Noam, war is the one thing that intercedes on an authoritarian, right? The reality of a war, you can't pretend it's not happening. And that's what's happening.
And the Pentagon's been hiding the true casualty count. We don't really know. But I saw today the Washington Post, I think, reported that 200 service members have been wounded as well. So there's a lot of people getting hurt. And also, like, add to your list of real human beings impacted by this war, the 800,000 people who have been evacuated from their homes in Lebanon, because the Israelis are basically telling everyone who lives within like 25 miles of the border that they have to leave.
Did you see the Israelis announced today too that they're not allowed back?
I think what's happening here, I think what's happening in Lebanon is going to go on a lot longer than what's happening in Iran, and that it's going to end with Israel trying to permanently occupy a lot of Lebanese territory.
Sounds like they want to, if they're not going to let fucking 800,000 people return to their homes.
Yeah. I mean, they're
another just evacuating. Learned it in Gaza, and so now they're
evacuating like major swaths of Beirut, which is a huge city.
Just using the opportunity of the conflict to pursue their larger purposes in the region, which Trump is totally fine with and Huckabee is totally fine with. There's no breaks.
Yeah. Hezbollah, obviously, terrible organization. Kills indiscriminately, kills Israelis, kills Druze, kills Christians in Lebanon as well. But yeah, I mean, the idea that it's strategically smart to undertake this massive operation as you're in the midst of a war with Iran, it feels like a bad idea. And it's just more of a cynical way to use everyone being distracted to do things you always wanted to do.
So speaking of corruption, the Times also published a piece over the weekend about the stock trading habits of Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, Trump's pick to replace Kristi Noem at DHS. Mullen reportedly bought shares in Chevron,
the only U.S. oil supplier with an active operation in Venezuela, 5 days before the United States attacked the country and later vowed to take over oil operations. According to the Times, Mullen has become quite the trader, reporting at least 130 trades last year and outperforming the market by 8%. Sure, it's just a coincidence. After selling his company, this is from the Times story too. After selling his company in 2021, Mullen reported fewer than 30 stock trades in 2022. In 2023, his first year as a senator, that jumped to 100. So suddenly, he just is trading a lot of stock these days. And, you know, his assets originally when he got to the Senate were between $2.8 and $9 million when he first got to the House. Now it's between $29 million and $97 million.
Jesus.
Guess he did some good trading, huh?
Yeah, it's good work, dude.
What do you guys think about Mark Wayne Mullen's? He's got a confirmation hearing this Thursday. It is very tempting, I imagine, for Democrats to focus on this story in the hearing. But what do you guys think?
Divide and conquer. I mean, this should be a part of it. Someone should dig in on this, because Donald Trump, in the State of the Union, one of his biggest applause lines was banning stock trading. And he wants to make it all about Pelosi and her preventing that from happening. And frankly, Pelosi has not been good on this issue. And it really sucks because it makes Democrats look bad. But members of Congress should not be allowed to buy and sell individual stocks. It is an absolute no-brainer that they should have their assets in a blind trust or something. They should not be buying and selling crypto. They shouldn't be selling futures or using Polymarket or Kalshi to bet on events. I mean, like, it is. I will never believe it's a coincidence that this guy bought a bunch of Chevron stock 5 days before we toppled the dictator in Venezuela and installed a much more oil-friendly dictator in Venezuela.
Yeah, it was a third party. It was a third party.
Yeah, sure.
If you read that statement, there's definitely, like, even if you take the statement as being accurate, which I don't know that necessarily you can, there's plenty of room inside of that statement for him to be doing whatever he wants. Yeah, they should not be trading individual stocks. None of us should be trading individual stocks because we're not stock traders. And the only reason it would make sense for members of Congress to be trading stock is because they have insider information. Even in an example they were proud of in the story, there was a member of Congress who was on a board and was bragging about the company to everybody on the committee. So that's one of the reasons people were buying stock in that. What are we doing here?
Well, Chris Collins, and he went to
Chris
jail.
Collins. And well, he went to jail, was pardoned by Trump. But not for that specific thing. I know. He goes to jail for
charged with insider trading.
For insider trading, for not that, not the one he was most proud of.
And Trump pardoned him.
And Trump pardoned him because he doesn't believe in insider trading. He thinks that's just good trading. And we also have all, by the way, God only knows what these people are doing on the betting markets, which we don't have any insight into, where they're trading with insider information, because the only way it makes sense is because these trades on like Kalshi and Polymarket are because of insider information. So of course it should be banned. And by the way, the disclosure rules should be better. Why on earth do we have ridiculous ranges where we find out how much money they have between 9 and 90 million? Like that is a ridiculous space set up by members of Congress to make it kind of confusing how much money they have and how much money they've made. We should have more disclosure for them more frequently. Like there's a whole bunch of reforms that would make this less of an issue. Bot Save America is brought to you by Hiya. Some children's vitamins on the market today contain up to 7 grams of sugar per serving and are stuffed with artificial additives and petroleum-based dyes. Hiya took the opposite approach. Zero sugar, zero gummy additives, just clean nutrition. Working alongside pediatricians and nutrition scientists, Hiya created a superpower chewable vitamin that packs a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables plus 15 essential vitamins and minerals into every dose. The ingredient list is clean, non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free. They thought of everything. Designed for kids 2 and up. Hiya ships straight to your door. You get this awesome reusable bottle with your first order, and then they send refills every month. Tommy, you have children.
You know, I was over at the Favreau's house the other day, and Charlie had just solved Fermat's last theorem.
Oh,
and it turns out the previous proof was wrong, so he really actually is the first one ever to solve it.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad they finally cleared that up. I can't even remember what Fermat's last theorem is. What is this
A
about?
To the N plus B to the N equals C to the N.
Because obviously we all know A squared plus B squared equals C squared, but it turns out there are no integers for which anything above 2 can be solved. But the question is, is that true?
It wasn't an elegant proof until Charlie started taking Hiya vitamins, which he loves. And I think the Favreau's are struggling to get him to eat those green vegetables But Hiya's Kids Daily Greens Plus Superfood is a total game changer for that, too. It's basically chocolate milk stuffed with veggies. It's a greens powder that's packed with 55 whole food source ingredients, just one scoop with milk or milk alternative, and watch them actually enjoy something that's secretly fueling their growing bodies.
I really would like Charlie Favreau to turn his sights on the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics, because I think that thing's ready to go.
I think you're right.
I'm excited for that.
That's a good
Let's
one.
Challenge the Copenhagen interpretation. We've worked out a special deal for Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/crooked. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to HiyaHealth.com/crooked and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither.
I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.
So one kind of fun, kind of pathetic story before we go. You may have noticed the recent trend of Trump just giving random interviews to any reporter who calls him. It turns out there's a reason. Everyone now has access to the president's personal cell phone number. The Atlantic reported over the weekend, and then Semaphore followed up as well, that Trump's number has become the biggest open secret in Washington, with journalists openly trading it among themselves. So many now have access to it and have been using it to regularly call the president that White House advisors have stopped keeping track of who's calling. And according to one White House official, as many as, quote, 10 reporters will call in a matter of 2 hours. Trump, unsurprisingly, loves the attention. He apparently has gotten into the habit of keeping his phone screen face up during meetings to just watch the notifications roll in.
Let them roll in.
Loves it. Trump aides have said that at the moment they have no intention of changing the number and have no plan to stop more people from getting a hold of it. You guys have it yet?
Yeah. Yes.
Should
actually.
We give him a call?
I got it.
You got it?
Yeah, I got it from a reporter.
Let's call him.
I'll call him now.
Do we have a plan? What are we going to say?
I was just going to call and say, hey, Tom Vitor from Pod Save America calling on a recorded line. How are you?
Great.
All right, let's do it.
Recorded line. Oh, that's important.
Oh, West Palm Beach number. It'd be so awkward when he calls me back after we're not recording.
You think he calls back? I don't think he...
No, he's just a receiver of calls.
This could be the last call.
Didn't we prank Rudy Giuliani once?
Sean Hannity. And boy, did he get the last laugh.
Sorry, guys. Didn't deliver on that one.
You think he's checking his voicemails?
Well, I'm sure what happened with me today was I sent two texts to people who I thought might have the number, and one of them gave me the number. And right? I mean, there's been a bunch of news
because
reports
of the
today about how easy it is to get it. And
so maybe today was the
it.
Last day. But yeah. Now he's finally going to have to change his number, like when everybody's emails were in that Sony hack.
Yes, yes. Because it sounds like there was one... Someone wrote a piece on... The Atlantic piece on this made it sound like, I think, one reporter kind of figured this out early. It was like Garrett Hawk or somebody, and got Trump's reaction to something about Biden really, or dropping out, Biden dropping out really early on, and had a scoop. And then every other reporter was like, oh, this dude is just taking calls from press now.
Also, I think maybe next time Love It or I should try, because we have 202 numbers.
Mm.
And so he probably sees 202 and says, oh, it's DC, and you don't have a 202 number.
Want to let it rip?
Well, we'll try again.
We'll try again.
We'll try it once an episode.
Okay, great.
I like that.
Just to see.
Remember when Biden would do an interview every 6 months?
Tell us what we should ask, everyone. Yeah.
Send in your questions.
What to ask the president in case we get him on the horn.
Get him on the blower.
You know?
What gives you hope?
I have to... There's a whole story about... So the story
is... $3.
Yeah, right. How do I convince my relative who loves Trump to not vote for him anymore?
Where's the climate pod, you fucks?
So apparently, like, CEOs and crypto bros are offering money for the number. This is in the story.
Sure, yeah.
There's a couple other funny parts to it before we go. One of them says the administration, so like everyone's calling, you know, they're like not just the big outlets, but like the smaller outlets,
us now, you know. But then it says the administration officials say Substack authors have started to call, forcing White House staff to look up names they don't recognize.
That's so funny.
Well, oh no, the Substack.
Well, we didn't talk about this, that today, in twice in his two different press events today, he made reference to a former president who he likes, who said he was right to go in to Iran, and then he's asked.
And said, "Wish I had done that."
Yeah, he said, "Wish I had done that." And then he's asked by Ducey later that day, "Who are you referring to? Was it George W. Bush? No. Was it Bill Clinton? I'm not saying." But you know, it's from these endless. It's from him being on the fucking phone all the time.
Yeah. Well, I assume that Donald Trump probably called Bill Clinton to commiserate about being unfairly treated over Jeffrey Epstein.
100%.
I feel like that's 99%.
I mean, it's not Barack Obama. I have a hard time believing, because he also said he's like someone I actually like, but it wouldn't be good for their career. Well, he's like they don't have much of a career anywhere at this point.
Well, so, I mean, it's four former
presidents.
That's
what I'm saying.
So we think it's got to be
as he often does, he's just lying.
He could
just
be making made up it the up. Story. Yeah. But I mean, Clinton, Biden, Obama. I do not think Barack Obama is talking to Trump on the phone saying he wished he had bombed Iran.
It's not.
Don't
Obama.
Think it's Obama. So I think it's Clinton, Biden, or Bush. Doesn't make sense for it to be Bush the way he's talking about it. Probably not Biden. So you're really
Clinton
left with
people.
Clinton.
The Clinton people are saying it wasn't him.
I mean,
which but they may not know. They may not know.
I don't know if they're
Jimmy Carter.
That's huge news.
Was there a window where Jimmy C might have said, "I wish I'd gone into it"? Not before this current operation. When did Jimmy Carter die? Was it before or after Midnight Hammer?
Before Midnight Hammer.
Do you think peace advocate and Nobel Peace Prize winner Jimmy Carter, in his 100th year, got on the phone with Donald Trump and said, "God damn it, I wish I fucking bombed Iran"?
I mean, it did
fuck up his administration. It did fuck his whole presidency up. Hey, listen,
he
let's put him on the list.
Right?
Yeah,
my
it's
bad.
Tough to be. Tough.
I bet he had
ago.
A conversation with Bill Clinton where he mentions Iran, and in Trump's mind, Clinton said that. And in Clinton's mind, if you ask Clinton about the conversation, Clinton didn't say that.
Well,
that's what I would.
Two guys that are famously great at remembering what they said.
That's what I'm getting at.
We have a serious thing about how accessible Donald Trump is, because this goes to what we were talking about earlier, which is like, oh, he's calling people treasonous. Like, he is incredibly accessible, and I do not think a Democrat needs to be as accessible as this, but like, man, there is value to having Donald Trump like in there every day communicating nonstop. And whoever we use is going to be somebody that represent us to learn, like, man, how much space he has to move, because he's out there time after time after time, just sort of new layer of paint, you know, like just new layer of paint. And yeah, sure, the windows don't open anymore because they're sealed shut from fucking paint. You can't access the outlets because there's so much paint. But man,
do we think it is it's certainly better for freedom of the press, for sure. It's probably better for the public to have the president be more accessible. I think that the next Democratic president should obviously be much more accessible than Joe Biden was. Do we think it has been good for Trump to be this accessible in this administration with his his 40% approval rating?
I think that he definitely gets a lot of flexibility and leeway for doing so many reps. I think he's figured out how to make scandals go away a little bit faster. Not all of them. Like, Epstein didn't go away. It was alive for months and months. It's still alive. I think in this instance of Iran, he's taken like 30 phone calls from reporters and given 30 different messages. So that part has not helped him.
Yeah. I also think
consistency at times.
Part of his ability to control the narrative is not his choice to be accessible, but his choice to kick out most reporters and not sit down for challenging questions or interviews from many people.
But see, yes and no. He's still like, we just watched him get the four hardest questions he could have gotten in any interview. Like, his approval rating is 40%. He's the worst president in American history. I think it does inure him to what the coverage would look like if the space were filled by a voice other than his. And I think in ways that are subtle, him being so accessible kind of takes the teeth out of the Democratic argument that he's a raging authoritarian looking to squash the free press and destroy American democracy. Like, I get, like, being around him all the time, seeing him all the time, I think kind of blunts that a little bit, both for reporters and for Americans. I do. I think we don't know what it would look like for him to not be doing this much, but I don't think the fact that his approval rating is so low is because this doesn't work.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between accessibility and, like, I think that because of Donald Trump, the expectation now among both journalists and probably a lot of Americans is that their president will be constantly communicating about everything that happens all the time. And so I think that if you do not do that as a president, you will
get yourself into trouble. Like, I think his constant style of communication is probably helpful. I think, like, you know, being more accessible to reporters here and there is, like, I think for him, it might be okay because he's lying about everything anyway, and he's screaming at them all anyway. But, like, I feel like the next Democratic president doing a 30 interviews a day by phone is not going to redound to their benefit.
No, I would say, well, we just don't have a counterfactual because it was Obama. You know, Joe Biden was Joe Biden, and before that was Barack Obama, who had more of a traditional kind of relationship with the press. I think the answer is somewhere between, is not between Obama and Biden, it's between Trump and Obama as to how much access you'll want. And because I think the Obama style, and someone who is as disciplined as Barack Obama, being more accessible and being a little bit looser is probably the answer.
Yeah, I think him freewheeling it is probably a net benefit. That said, just like in the Iran context again, like he is a big shit right now because despite all this access, he did not prepare the country for what he was going to do, right? Yeah. He didn't use the State of the Union to lay out a plan. He hasn't really delivered a speech about what we're going to do in Iran. So I think it has harmed him in that he has come away as being unserious when he's doing like an event with the MLS soccer team about casualties in Iran and then telling like Lionel Messi that he looks hot. That literally happened. Actually, it was the guy next to Lionel Messi who told him he was hot. I forget his name, but
yeah. And I've noticed that the quality of the questions he gets is just lower because he doesn't face best reporters.
A couple good real reporters, and then you'll have like Lindell TV or whatever.
Yeah, like the way that Sean McCreesh asked that question, I think last week, about the school in Iran.
Yeah.
And just like the way that he, not just the fact of the question, but the way that he phrased the question, you never hear that.
Well, I would just say, I thought it was a great question. That is the hardest question I've ever seen a president asked. Like, I don't think you've ever seen a question phrased exactly like that because we've never had a president that.
Yeah, we never.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. It's like, because it's hard. That is the right way to ask a question of someone so despicable as Donald Trump. But it's hard to find that balance. But to your point, like, what was that, Friday, Thursday, right? Like, so we're just saying that, like, it's been a weekend since he was in a full press conference where half the questions were real and serious and tough questions and half of them were full of shit, dumb questions from, like, if you just took the serious questions he's getting, he is taking probably far more serious questions, forget Joe Biden, than what Barack Obama took when Barack Obama was what we considered a very accessible president.
I don't think that's true.
Oh,
Serious questions? I can remember from Trump, like, you can remember the interviews where Trump sitting down with Tapper, Trump sitting down with Savannah Guthrie, Trump sitting down with 60 Minutes, like those are tough, real, difficult interviews. Peter Ducey is maybe one of the better ones when he's running, and Caitlin Collins when she's allowed in there.
But he does it with a light touch,
right? Peter does it with a light touch. Caitlin's probably the best one in the press corps.
There are some real reporters sprinkled in with some very stupid, ridiculous people. Yeah. I think Sean McCreesh's question was great and good on him for asking it. I think that used to be the norm.
Yes,
like I remember my uncle was a political reporter, and I think it was George H.W. Bush said that the United States should be okay with assassinating foreign leaders. And he and his buddy ran around to every event and asked him who he would kill first and why. And just ruined his whole rollout event. And that should be where we're at.
Yeah, well, yes. Those were when Barack Obama or George W. Bush or someone did a press conference, remember it would be like you would set up the East Room, or you'd set up a space. It was outside of the normal room. It was like you made a moment of it because it was like kind of less frequent. And then the questions were all very serious, hitting on all the major news topics. Like Trump breaks that up. You'd have to, do the actual math on the give and takes. But the fact that he is as accessible to the mainstream media as any president we've ever had. It's the truth.
All right. Well. Well, including to us, hopefully.
Yeah, call me back, sir.
Okay.
Should I text him?
Oh, yeah.
Text him.
Just a pic of me. I can text him.
All right, guys. That's our show for today. Dan and I will be back with a new show on Friday. If you want to listen to Pod Save America ad-free and get access to exclusive podcasts, go to Cricut.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. Also, please consider leaving us a review. That helps boost this episode and everything we do here at Cricut. Pod Save America is a Cricut Media production. Our producer is Saul Rubin. Our associate producer is Farah Safari. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive editor. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Naomi Sengel is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Ben Hefcoat, Mia Kelman, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, and Ryan Young.
Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.